We wondered who was going to be recording this. Now we know Harold Bruckschneider. He doesn't take pictures anymore. He just gets a recording of everything you do in another way. Welcome to the Heritage Day Dinner. As you know, November 2nd, Sunday of this year, was our Heritage Day. We had planned at one time of having this on last Friday night, which would have been Halloween, and we decided maybe that wasn't the best night to have a Heritage Night dinner, leaving our homes unprotected. And so this night is the one that we had decided upon. Even though it's November 7th, symbolically and historically, this is the Heritage Day dinner. And to my knowledge, this is the 27th annual Heritage Day dinner. The reason I can say that is that no one can prove that we haven't had one, I don't think anyone can prove it, every day since the society was founded 25 years ago, or 27 years ago. So this is the 27th annual, and we're just so proud to have so many of you here, and so many unusual people. You know, really, all of us were saying, how many people do you know here tonight? And I had to confess that I probably could name perhaps 40 by name. And some of them dropped down to 28, and then George Donner said, I probably could have done 70 in my better days, but considering senility, I'm down to about 28%. But we do have some people here that don't always attend these meetings. Bill Creason is here, and the reason that he doesn't usually come to these meetings, the last time he went to a meeting like this, he got food poisoning, he bit his own tongue. And, you know, the person who got ticket number one, would you believe it, is Paul Johnson. Now that, something ought to be said for that. He was the first one down to pick up the ticket. The last time that he ever went to an event like this, he went to an event and he said they had the Dance of the Seven Veils. And no child was admitted after six, he said. Now, Paul, we're proud to have you here with us tonight. You know, when you begin to recognize anyone in a group like this, you're always going to miss someone. You're all very special. But certainly the decorations on the table tonight have to be recognized. And Carl Rohl and Gertrude Cuthbert. We usually start this occasion with something that certainly would be lacking without it, and that is called the Wastebasket Corner. And so with your indulgence, we will go into the Wastebasket Corner. November 7th, a very special day in your lives, and even though you may not recognize it, you ought to take time and step back and take notice of the historic events that occurred on this day. So November 7th, in 1811... the battle that set the scene for the War of 1812 occurred in Indiana when General Harrison marched against Chief Tecumseh at Tippecanoe. The war began in earnest on Michigan soil when on July 17, 1812, the British captured Mackinac Island. It was on this day, you see. And in 1902, Gadamer Gombich, the world-famous entomologist, proved beyond a doubt that gypsy moths do no harm. They just drive you crazy banging their little tambourines. That was proven on this day. And in 1853, the Sawdust Road, an extension of 3rd Street across the South Channel to today's U.S. 31 Bridge, which had been washed out in the flood of 1852, was rebuilt and now ready for service. See how important it is? And in 1814, Francis Scott Key invented the hole named after him. And in 1916, Jeanette Rankin, a Republican from Montana, became the first woman elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. All you ladies, clap. And in 1921, and that was not too long ago, Jose Juarez Speedy Sanchez, the inventor of the margarita, died. And in keeping with his last wishes, his casket was rimmed with salt. That all happened on this day. And in 1805, Lewis and Clark, at the mouth of Oregon's Columbia River, sighted the Pacific Ocean. And 1876, Alexander Graham Bell discovered his bathtub had a familiar ring. And in 1869, Princeton and Rutgers played the first intercollegiate football game. And in 1933, although state elections rescinded the prohibition law, or rescinded prohibition, the University of Michigan asked fans not to bring their flasks to the Iowa game upcoming that weekend because of the conduct of the fans following the Ohio State at the previous game, the previous weekend. So all of you Michigan fans can hang it. It never occurred on Michigan State's campus, let me tell you. And 1103, Robin Hood uttered those now famous words when he said to Friar Tuck, "Take those sequins off your robes. I said we were merry, not gay." And all of that occurred on this day. I thought you should know that. Before you leave tonight, I hope you'll have an opportunity to step up to the windows or certainly go into the cars. Look across the way at the beautifully restored museum. The thing that I want you to notice, and here again I'm going to fail to recognize someone in the room tonight, but we have to recognize that fine renovation committee of Jack Brown, Val Easton, Phil Lundwall, and Tom Ringelberg, among others who were involved in it. But one of the things that they did was to make sure that there was a little globe light over each of the divisions around the building so that at nighttime there is a silhouette played against each of the walls, and it is quite beautiful, and I hope that you have an opportunity not to necessarily see the painting tonight, but the shadows that are cast on the building. I think you'll enjoy it. At our September 18th meeting at the Presbyterian Church, there were some volunteers recognized that I think should be recognized tonight, because it was a small group there at that September 18th meeting. And at that time, Al Hunting, who is now a resident of Ottawa County and is on the State Historical Society, Michigan's Historical Society Board of Directors, presented some documents to these people. This year, for the first time, we exceeded 10,000 people going through our museum. We had been working toward it, 8,000, 9,000, back to 8,000, up to 9,000, but this year, with this fine group of volunteers and the work that they have done over at the museum, and the ones that I'm going to recognize and announce tonight are certainly not all of them, because there are a lot of volunteers besides these people that make up the staff that make this just a fine museum. But I think 10,000 is certainly a recognizable achievement. But those people that were recognized by the state, Dr. Mary Kitchell, Denver Todd, Maury Wilson, Chet and Betty Anderson, Alice Silliman, who I don't think is here tonight. Alice, are you here? I don't believe so. And Gertrude Klepfer. Those people, except for Alice, are here, and I think they should be given a good hand for the fine volunteer work that they've done for the year. The other thing that I would like to recognize tonight, before turning it over to our speaker, or the persons who will be introducing our speaker, one thing we've been working toward is recognizing the centennial families and businesses and homes. And it has been a struggle. And Ann Gaiman has been hard at work at this, and has gotten the information out into the community, at least for the families. She has received back just one. And even though we think that we have some names that are certainly deserving of the award of being called a centennial family, such as Robinson, Brock, Bills, Harbeck, Nyland, Johnston, Baker, and Scott, we don't have that documentation back in our hands. And until we do, we're not going to officially recognize it. But we have one family here tonight, and they're sitting over at Ann's table, and I think that it would be fine to have them recognized. Maybe the whole whatever of the fools are here tonight, but certainly Jay Nyhoff is here with his son. Jay Nyhoff, if you could please come up here and be recognized as the first centennial family to be recognized by the Historical Society. Please come up. You know, one of the dangerous things, this had been the city clerk for, what, 180 years?
Almost.
Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is almost as dangerous as turning it over to Bill Creason, but would you like to say a word?
You might be making a mistake, because somebody's got to reach. It will shut me off. How far back do you want to go? When I think 46% of the people voted at this last election, in 1929, when I handled the first big election, when the president was elected, we had 96% of the people turned out. Now, that was a real election, and all those ballots were counted there by hand because they're all paper ballots.
How many people was that?
How many people?
Out of 96%.
I don't get hear you.
How many people were in the town? What was the population?
I don't remember.
Were there 96 in the town?
more than that. Yeah, that's right. I had to hire people in the 5th ward. That was the old Polish Falcon Society building. And the people were storming in there so fast that I just picked up people that came in and said, can you stop and wait just a little while and start folding ballots. We had, I think, 6 ballots that day, a bed sheet, a big ballot, and amendments and whatnot. And I got home. I started that day at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was at the office. And I got home the next day about 8:15. I was up all night. Phil Rosebeck fell asleep at the job, and I had to take him home. The people were crying because they had to go out and get something to eat, so I went out and got lunches for everybody all night long. I just brought coffee to keep them awake.
Jay Dyhoff, when did your family arrive here, your ancestors?
Grandpa came here in 1870. My dad was born here in 1872, so our family has lived here all those years since 1972.
What part of Poland did they come from?
The northern part. We didn't come too far from there, though. We came from the northern Netherlands. That was the little town of Buffalo. It would be interesting, I think, to people. A great-great-great-grandpa had 11 boys with his first wife. She died, naturally. He remarried and had 11 boys with that wife and 2 girls. So you wonder why there's so many pools at the beginning.
Thanks very much, Jay. Well, the pool family is duly recognized, and we're proud of you, and I hope you're proud of the award. We hope to do this same thing with other families in the community, and certainly with homes as well. You don't have to have lived in your home for 100 years to have your home recognized as being a centennial home. So if you have one, please let us know. You know, Ann's committee is hard at work trying to sort out what are the businesses, where are the families, where are the homes, and your help would certainly be all part of this and would be really appreciated. Tonight, we have the pleasure of having a man from the Michigan Sesquicentennial. In our area, I was speaking to him at dinner tonight, and I said, you have to understand that we've been at this Sesquicentennial for 3 years, and so we can let that flow off of our tongues very well. In fact, we're quite used to some Indian words in our area, those that the entire state are involved in. Kalkaska is not foreign to us. Keweenaw certainly is not. Owasso, Ottawa, which is the proper name for Ottawa, by the way. And Gabagawachi, we can let that roll right off. We're all struggling, though, with learning a new word the word, the Native American word for Michigan, before white man got here, and that's Michi-Asuk-Yegan. So you can struggle with that if you will, but by the time the Susquecentennial is into full swing, we'll be able to say Susquecentennial and Michi-Asuk-Yegan, and they'll say, I know where he's from. He's from Grand Dame. He's got to be. Michi-Asuk-Yegan. Write that on the tablecloth or someplace. Michi-Asuk-Yegan. Tonight, to introduce the man who will be introducing the speaker, I turn it over to a gentleman. By the way, you'll notice that we haven't mentioned the millage, and we haven't mentioned anything about the search committee. And there are certain things that we're holding in abeyance because we don't want it all we don't want to let it all out tonight. And so the man that's coming up here is going to explain to you when the next meeting will be so that you can perhaps come to that and learn about it. A man who, for years and years, I have admired this man and the success that he has been in our community. And I asked Paul the other day, I said, Paul, really, what has it been? And he said, it's very simple, Dave. He said, you dress British and you think Yiddish. Paul Versifoot. Paul?
It goes without saying that our president has a sense of humor. He gets a lot of these things off these little signs on the wall of his office. There's one that I couldn't quite figure out. As you come into his reception room, here's a big sign. Teeth filled while you wait. The one I like the best, though, is the one that's in next to his chair. It says, caution to young mothers, do not nurse your child wearing braces. My part of this program is very brief. I'm very happy that a year ago we met in this room, we had slightly over 100 people. Tonight we have 135. I think that's just a great turnout. I hope you enjoyed your meal. Our next meeting is Thursday, November 20th. Now, we're not going to feed you, although Dorothy Wessel says we'll have some coffee and cookies at this meeting. It'll be at the Presbyterian Church at 7:30. Now, this will be our annual business meeting, and this is why Dave's asked me to make a special point of this. There are several things that we have to consider. First is the election of officers for the coming year. The second is we have to vote on the change in our bylaws, because now we are a partially tax-supported institution. And then we will have an explanation of our budget, which incidentally is more than twice any budget we've ever had before, and that's going to require a little explaining possibly. And I'm sure our good friend George Donner will give us a story about the millage, and Dave will talk to us about the search for a full-time director. So please mark this down on your calendar, Thursday, November 20, 7:30, at the Presbyterian Church, our annual business meeting. Now, tonight, it gives me a great deal of pleasure. Mary Jane and Sandy Macbeth are the co-chairmen for the Northwest Ottawa Michigan Susquecentennial Committee. They are doing a great job, and you're going to hear more about that in the coming weeks. Sandy, I would like to ask you, please, to introduce the speaker of the evening.
Thank you, Paul. Gabaguachi is okay, but that other one, I'm never going to make it. Not even a whole year. Our guest tonight has never been to Grand Haven, and we met him here at 5 o'clock tonight and walked down over the ferry landing and walked down along the boardwalk. The sun came out, it hung there, and we walked, he said, where's my camera? It just disappeared behind the clouds like it was magic. I couldn't believe it. It was perfect. And then we got in the car and took a drive all the way around and showed them the city. So, yeah, good introduction, we hope. Hal Dittenberg is a lifelong Michiganian graduating from Eastern Michigan with a BA degree in history and English and an MA degree in instructional technology design. I'll have to explain that one to me later. Also, he has an MA degree from Michigan State University in telecommunications. He has been with the state government since 1983. His first role was assistant to the personnel director in the governor's office. He also served as deputy director of the Michigan Youth Corps and served as special assistant to the director of the Travel Bureau, Michigan Department of Commerce. Some of his duties include coordinating the first and second annual governor's conference and served as one of the coordinators for the Society of American Travel Writers Convention. Hal is currently director of special events for the Office of Michigan Sesquicentennial. The goal of the special events division is to create new statewide events that will give the opportunity for 9.2 million people to participate in our birthday party. Speaking to our group tonight, Hal will be giving us an update on the sesquicentennial planning and outlining of the various themes for the year-long celebration. Let's give him a warm, Grand Haven welcome, Hal Dittenberg.
Thank you and good evening. It is indeed my first visit to Grand Haven, and I'd like to thank Sandy and Mary Jane for giving me a tour of your beautiful city, and I certainly will come back and visit it. That sunset this evening was just spectacular, and it was just a wonderful welcome, and I thank you people for arranging that for me. People ask me, how did I get involved in the sesquicentennial when the legislature had passed the law establishing the office back in 1985? And I think the only answer is I was one of the few people in the state of Michigan that could say the word sesquicentennial. And I cannot say it though rapidly 5 times in a row. I'm still working on that. But the word I heard this evening, I think we should challenge the whole state of Michigan as a sesquicentennial project to learn the correct pronunciation of Michigan. This evening, I'd like to talk about the various themes of the sesquicentennial that have been approved and adopted by the Sesquicentennial Commission. I'd like to go somewhat in a chronological order, almost a month by month, if you will, of the themes and how we plan on celebrating our 150 years of statehood. As you are well aware, our birthday or admission day is January 26, 1987. As special events director, I have to admit quite candidly, I wish our history had been written a little bit differently, and originally we would have come into the Union in June of 1836 rather than January of 1837. It's a lot easier to plan events with summer than I'm not sure what January 26th is going to bring to us next year. I do remember 1978. It was our largest snowfall in the history of recording snowfalls in the state. I certainly hope that's not repeated this January. But it's January 26th, and for the theme for the month of January, we are calling it Michigan's Magical Birthday Party. And if 26 isn't your lucky number, it will be when Michigan celebrates its 150th birthday as the 26th state on January 26, 1987. And it really begins on January 1 with the 26 magical days of Michigan. And we have taken a different day and we'll be highlighting a different aspect of Michigan people, history, and activities. For example, on January 2nd, it will be called Born in Michigan Day. And in cooperation with the Department of Public Health, we will do an event announcing that for every child born in Michigan during 1987, the SQ-150 logo will appear on his or her birth certificate. And we will be getting out the 26 magical days to all the community so that you can plan events from a local point of view, local interest, and there's a wide range with 26 days. On Friday, January 23rd, we will launch the magical birthday party kickoff in Lansing at the new exhibition center. And it's primarily a media event to let the rest of the nation know that we are indeed celebrating our 150th birthday. And also it will be a thank you event for the local sesquicentennial agencies and the planning committees throughout the state. Right now, in every county in the state, there is a local sesquicentennial agency making plans for how the local community and county will be celebrating the 150th birthday. And so we're planning that magical birthday party as a thank you for the local effort. If it wasn't for the local effort and the local support, we would not have a very, what I think is going to be a spectacular celebration. We'll show Texas how to really throw a birthday party. Continuing that weekend, it'll be called the Magical Birthday Weekend, and we're planning to take this statewide to shopping malls throughout the state. And I'm glad that we are having the dinner here at Harborfront, because all sorts of ideas are running through my mind as to how we can do the birthday party here, but involving local magicians, local high school bands, local community leaders to plan birthday parties throughout the state. We will have giant birthday cards so that you can send your birthday greetings, those that you that care to Lansing. These birthday cards will be then put into our archives. We will have giveaways. We will have actually the first of many birthday cakes that weekend. And as I was preparing my remarks for the speech, I went through and counted how many birthday cakes I'm going to have to go through. And I will tell you, quite honestly, by Monday evening, January 26th, I never want to see another birthday cake as long as I live with it. Also that weekend is Super Bowl weekend. Well, we know at least the Lions are not going to be in Super Bowl. I know on this side of the state there seems to be some loyalty to the Chicago Bears, and that may be a possibility that they will be in the Super Bowl. But we are planning a Michigan tailgate party out in Los Angeles, which will be the site of Super Bowl. And working with the various alumni associations throughout the state, we want to get that on national television and let the rest of the country again know we are celebrating our birthday. Throughout that weekend, working with the Historical Observance Committee, one of their subcommittees is a statewide religious committee made up of representatives from all the denominations throughout the state. And we will be having a sesquicentennial involved with the various religious services that weekend. Finally, on Admission Day, tends to be a day for the official ceremonies, the weekend for the parties, the fun, and Monday the official ceremonies. We will be issuing the first day of issue commemorative stamp. A Michigan artist has designed the stamp that the Postal Service has approved for our commemorative stamp. The Commission has recommended to the Postal Service that Sault Ste. Marie be the site for the first day of issue stamp. From a historical point of view, many of you are probably aware that Sault Ste. Marie is the third oldest community in the North American continent. And so that recommendation has gone on to the Postal Service, and they will make the final decision for the site. Sandy will be receiving very soon from our office a packet of a proposed program for noontime ceremonies that we hope will happen in every county throughout the state on our birthday. And there's a number of suggested activities in there, and certainly we encourage all the local communities to take part in that. One of our goals in the office is, many of you may be familiar with the I Am Michigan song, which is part of the Travel Bureau ad campaign for our travel and tourism promotion program. That has become more or less the adopted theme for our sesquicentennial, and we hope statewide at 12:25 on the dot that day, every radio station in the state will play our adopted state song. Illuminary ceremonies will be conducted that night throughout the state. In 1837, the state created the illuminary ceremony. Apparently there were bonfires in the communities, candles were placed in the windows, and I think the symbolic message there was the birth of a new state, so we hope to recreate that 1837 event in 1987, and again Sandy will be getting the information. The Michigan Retailers Association will be sponsoring that event. Also that evening, the commission has sanctioned some balls for the purpose of raising funds for the state library, museum, and archives complex, which will be opened in 1988. Also, local communities are encouraged to hold sesquicentennial events that evening in celebration of our birthday. So that's the first theme, the magic of Michigan for the month of January. Our office provided you with some a packet of information this evening that you find at your chairs. And one of the fact sheets outlines the Michigan Family Reunion, which is the second major theme that we hope to carry throughout the entire year, encouraging communities to have community reunions, families to have family reunions, alumni associations to have alumni reunions, and right down the line. And I'll let you read that material rather than discussing it here this evening, but it is in your packet of information. The next theme is called 26 Stars Over Michigan, and that will be done primarily in the month of July. Every July 4th, as the flag changed, the star field of the flag changed because there was a new state entered into the Union, the newly designed U.S. flag was raised on July 4th. So across the state, next July 4th in all the communities will be provided with 26 stars, flags, in memory of that 150 years ago. Also, there will be a 10-city fireworks spectacular and simultaneously broadcast radio program. Invitations have been issued to cities throughout the state. A major sponsor has presented us with a package to do this simultaneously broadcast in 10-city fireworks spectacular. And because it requires a budget decision on the part of the mayor, we're waiting to hear from responses from those cities, and then the sponsor itself will determine what actual 10 cities will participate in the program. The next theme is the Michigan Parade and Picnic Day. Again, we're looking at the month of July because July 4th, as you are well aware, is a traditional day for parades and picnics. Communities are invited to conduct parades or focus on existing parades with sesquicentennial themes. There's basically two goals behind the Parade and Picnic Day. The first goal is to have hundreds of sesquicentennial parades with high school bands playing the official sesquicentennial march and the I Am Michigan song and focusing on community and state history. The second goal is to highlight Michigan's agriculture bounty and wealth of food products by having community organizations, businesses, and families have picnics exclusively featuring Michigan products. The Department of Agriculture, our office, the Department of Commerce Products Office are developing historic menus to feature at the Michigan picnics. And communities and families are challenged, quite honestly, to be creative. We're encouraging local newspapers to develop contests for Michigan Picnic recipes using local food products. And Michigan Picnics can also be held in other places in the nation for former Michiganians who cannot be in the state that day. I know we are planning one for when the state is in Washington with the Smithsonian Festival. And that leads me into, which I think is one of the most exciting projects of our sesquicentennial, is the Festival of American Folk Life that will be held June 24th through July 5th at the Smithsonian Institute on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. Michigan will be the featured state, and to exhibit the vitality of Michigan's continuing folk traditions in a living museum program. The festival's goal is to preserve and to celebrate the richness and diversity of folk culture. It is not only the strength of the traditions that are celebrated, but the vitality of the tradition bearers. Right now, we have researchers from the Smithsonian visiting throughout the state, determining what folk traditions we will be focusing on. And that two-week period next year, 90 artists, folk artists from Michigan, will be invited to participate in the festival. Also, we see it as an opportunity to highlight other aspects of the state and the talents of our citizens. And so we are producing a number of ancillary programs throughout Washington, D.C. Right now, we have secured sites at the Sylvan Amphitheater, which is adjacent to the Washington Monument. We will have sites on front of the Capitol steps, Union Station, and the old post office. And we will be using these sites to focus and highlight other Michigan artists and talent. Also, we are seeking right now sponsorship from a corporation to bring the entire festival back to Michigan so that the Michiganians back home here in the state can certainly celebrate and enjoy what over 1 million people will see in Washington, D.C. When the festival is there. Also, October 3rd, 1987, all the museums throughout the state will have a museum day, and the theme for that October 3rd program are folk traditions. The next one is the one that I get the most questions on, and I probably lose the most sleep over every night, and that is the theme of the Water Festival. The water, it is beauty, it's recreation, it's commerce, and of course it's sport, and it's as old and constant as life itself. No other single word is as synonymous with Michigan, and our 150th birthday will pay tribute to the water with a year-long celebration, the Michigan Sesquicentennial Water Festival. The festival will highlight the many ways Michigan has been served by the water, our state's greatest natural resource. Throughout the state, what we plan on doing are tapping into a number of existing events, and I was happy to hear tonight that Grand Haven has Winterfest in February. So I certainly want to learn more about that and talk to the director to get that involved in the Water Festival. We will launch the year-long Water Festival January 17th with Tip-Up Town at Houghton Lake as the official launching of the Water Festival. And now I come to the reason why I lose sleep every night. We are creating three brand new events for the Water Festival. One of them, I understand, is the word has spread on it, and right now there are no rooms left in Traverse City to see the tall ships. In our sesquicentennial film, we talk about the tall ships, and I always emphasize that we are attempting to bring them in. The governor has issued 35 invitations to the international foreign sailing vessels to come into the Great Lakes and to participate in our sesquicentennial celebration.
Our batting average so far is pretty good. We've only received two rejections. Lots of inquiry, and I'm still very hopeful. That's phase one. Phase two of Tall Ships is, again, through corporate sponsorship, bringing in the privately chartered tall ships that are available. We are talking in price ranges for over a six-week period, anywhere from $80,000 to $135,000. I would be happy to take anyone's check tonight that would like to sponsor a privately chartered tall ship. You can do whatever you want with it. All I ask is that it be in Traverse City on July 25th for our parade of sail. The third phase is to involve the Michigan private boat owners and produce a parade of sail. We are using the tall ships as a backdrop to a very important event, the National Governors Conference, that will be held in Traverse City July 26th through the 28th. As we learn of the tall ships, both the foreign vessels and the privately owned vessels, we certainly have every intention of letting every port city in Michigan know of their acceptance to come to Traverse City, and certainly encourage the port cities then to extend an invitation to those ships to visit their cities. And you certainly have a beautiful city, and I sincerely hope that we get one or two tall ships down here to Grand Haven. It will be a spectacular and memorable experience. The two other events with the Water Festival are a statewide canoe flotilla that will be conducted in June of 87. Last year we tried a statewide sesquicentennial torch run, starting up in Copper Harbor, starting from Monroe, and starting from New Buffalo. We had over 600 runners traveling over 850 miles to bring the flame to Lansing so that the governor could light the 150 flame that officially started our sesquicentennial celebration. So we're quite excited about the canoe flotilla. We see it as a wonderful opportunity for communities to create events welcoming the canoeists or as they are departing from their communities onto the next leg of the trip. We hope to have thousands of people involved in this event. The third new event under the Water Festival is a celebrating friendship festival. And I know it probably doesn't have a lot of meaning to you people here on the west side of the state, but the province of Ontario has played such a very important role in our history. And really, when you think of it, 150 years of friendship that has been established, that Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and Ontario, Port Huron, and Sarnia, Ontario, and Detroit, and Windsor, and Amherstburg are creating what will be, hopefully, many festivals to follow the launch in 1987 of this Friendship Festival. The last theme is a toast to tomorrow for the end of the year. Quite frankly, all of us in the office have been so busy with concentrating on January 26th, we haven't given much thought to December of 87, other than that the commission has said the theme will be a toast to tomorrow, and it will focus on two elements, the youth of our state and, of course, the future. Where will we be in the year 2037 when we celebrate our bicentennial? I know I plan to hire myself out as a consultant to the state of Michigan for the bicentennial after learning so much about planning a sesquicentennial. And just like to close tonight, what I think is a quote from our own historian, Bruce Canton. Michigan has never really had a present moment. It has a mysterious past and an incalculable future, attractive, terrifying by turns, but the moment where the two meet is always a transition. The state is caught between yesterday and tomorrow, existing less for itself than for what it leads to. It is a road whose ends are distorted by imagination and imperfect knowledge. the great American feeling of being en route to the unknown, to something new, to the fantastic reality that must lie beyond the mist, is perfectly represented here in Michigan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Hal. And on behalf of all these fine people tonight, we want to present you with a coin from our sesquicentennial in 1984. And I hope you remember Grand Haven.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that was a fine talk, Hal. And you mentioned the Michigan song, and I don't know what it is, but I do remember one that my dad used to sing to me about. And...